All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Friday. I'm looking up the date. It's October 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site for you podcast listeners. Get that $24.95 a month discount by going to DFSR.com/deals. I think we still have a free 7-day trial up right there. Is that true? Is the 7 days for free up there? Okay, good. Get NBA lineups, which have cashed just about every single slate so far, both sites, FanDuel and DraftKings NFL as well. It's all covered under one subscription package, DFSR.com/deals. This deal is not going to last probably past the next 7 days, so go and get on it now before rates go back up to our usual $34.95. So DFSR.com/deals. Buddy, NBA... it's been, I don't know, been fairly predictable so far, I think. I don't want to call it too crazy. I think that we've been pretty much on most of the opportunity, a couple of outlier games here and there, but I'm feeling very good about the way NBA has started. How are you feeling? Do you want to talk about the FanDuel thing now? Do you want to just have people read what we're going to post about it? Do you want to make a quick comment before
we get into these games? tease it briefly. I think this is kind of what we predicted going into the season, but it's borne out and then some. I think that people are really, really, just based on our chatters, who I think are a cut above the average DFS player in terms of sophistication, given that they're having trouble wrapping their minds around it, and just from what I've seen and how easy it's been to cash in FanDuel cash games recently, I think that people just haven't picked up on the fact that guys getting scratched / getting injured late in the games or after the lock is too rare to worry about. And so given that you get to drop your lowest score, it's going to very often make sense to just find a guy at some position who might play some minutes at the lowest possible price tag, lock him in, and then count on dropping that score. And, you know, if all goes to plan and you happen to have like the Alex Len or Kelly Olynyk or whatever that winds up not performing, maybe you get some, you know, courtesy points out of that guy. But just by and large, just allocating as much salary as possible to eight positions, throwing away a ninth and seeing what happens. The math, I think, is very clear cut. Obviously, you have to account for some possibility that you have someone be a dud, but yeah, I think it's just too hard for people. I think people like the security of thinking that they could drop a score more than they actually like winning. Yep. So that's
what it is, so man. Fun. It's a mind F. It really messes with your mind when you're staring down the barrel of just staring at guys that don't look like they're worth playing in cash games. You know, like Derek Jones for us last night, Zach Collins for us last night on FanDuel. And people were like, you know, Zach Collins really top lineup? I was like, just assume he's not there. He's 3,600. He's going to play 25 minutes. Assume you don't need his points. You're looking at the rest of your lineup. That's it, right? Like, now it ends up that he's not the lowest score. Cameron Payne was basically everyone's lowest score because he was a chalk play and really didn't do much. But at that point, okay, then Zach Collins is still a decent play because he's not a total zero, right? So, like, you want to find these guys minimum priced. 20 to 25 minutes is probably going to be okay. More, and you're really pretty much home free. But staring down the barrel at some of these bad players is a real hard thing. And I'm just looking at people's lineups, and people are not been able to get over the mental hurdle of it yet. And the math, like you said, is very clear cut. We'll post something today that's just going to outline exactly what I was saying in chat last night, and just say, look at these lineups, look at the projected points, subtract the lowest one, and you're gonna find the highest score. So we'll post that. It'll go up on DFSR.com today. Let's go through some of the games. We have I think we have 9 games tonight for a big Friday in the NBA. We did learn a decent amount for some teams from Wednesday, between Tuesday, Wednesday, and I know there's no back to backs here. But between Tuesday and Wednesday, I think we learned enough about some teams to know who we can start to trust, where some minutes are gonna be allocated, where some rotations are gonna go as well. One of the first teams is Charlotte and Orlando. I mean, Charlotte, they played Kemba a lot. The starters didn't play a whole lot. Is this a team that, I mean, besides Kemba, is there anyone we can trust here? Kind of the same for Orlando with Aaron Gordon. Like, he played a lot of minutes, and then the wing, Jonathan Simmons, played some too. Are we just picking out like one or two guys that we can trust on these teams going forward? Because I feel like we have multiple seasons of just not really, these are just two teams that I rarely get excited about from DFS perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, I think Charlotte, for starters, is almost always just a throwaway team. Like, I perhaps have a different problem with them than you do, which is to say they've just been playing these guys the same amount of minutes for years on end, and so they're all pretty much appropriately priced. You know? So unless it's a terrific matchup and a small slate, usually you're not even going to play them. And this year, I mean, it's still very early, of course, but they spread the minutes out pretty significantly in that first game as well. Walker got his 38 minutes. And then after that, it was kind of like, you know, this mix and match party. I mean, even Batum only played 31 minutes. People thought you'd see more consistent minutes out of the bigs with Bill Hernan Gomez and Cody Zeller there. You didn't even get it from them. Yeah, it's just a team that is not DFS relevant at this point in the season. Orlando, I don't know. I think they're a little bit maybe more interesting if you zoom out for the whole season than you do. Like, maybe not in this matchup in particular, but opportunity tends to spring up on Orlando. So I'm still willing to keep an eye on them. But yeah, early on, again, these guys like Vooch, you know, Gordon, there's just not value on these guys. Jonathan Isaac. So yeah, I'm going to start by trying to look elsewhere. And if I need to wind up plugging one of these consistent minutes, but relatively unexciting guys in, then I guess I could grit my teeth and bear.
Yeah, like I think Vooch is going to continue to lose minutes to Bamba. We saw that kind of start to go that way, sure, in the first game. And because they brought in Bamba, they want him to be like their center of the future. He was a very high draft pick. He played 24 minutes. Vooch played 28. It wasn't any kind of foul trouble or anything. Gordon played 38.
Yeah, but really, that just makes them both unplayable. Like,
that's what I mean. That's where I kind of land with all these teams. Like, you know, Malik Monk, he plays a lot off the bench. You're going to trust Malik Monk's – this is for Charlotte. You're going to trust Malik Monk's minutes off the bench? I'm not. Like, 33 minutes,
I'm going to need weeks of that for sure.
Oh, exactly. And then the rub there is going to be after weeks of Malik Monk, 33 minutes a game off the bench, he'll be appropriately priced and it won't matter anymore, right? I think this is kind of just where I land in the middle with teams like this. Now, the other interesting team here, the next game is New York goes in and plays Brooklyn. Trey Burke was an overwhelming chalk for the first, correctly, by the way. Like, no Moutier. He's going to start alongside Nick DeLina. And he was horrible. He barely played. He was like 70-something percent start. Barely played. Really, outside of Frank, none of their starters played. What do we do? What do we do with the Knicks here? Can we go back to the well on a guy like Burke? It's like, are the minutes just too crazy low? He played 20 minutes in the first game. What do we do here?
Yeah, Burke is funny. The price has come up as well, in spite of only playing 20 minutes in the first game. He was obviously like just real, real bad. So I don't know.
Here's the thing. For points per minute, he was really good. He scored 15 points, 4 assists, and 3 rebounds. Points per minute, he was kind of awesome, but 20 minutes. This is where I'm having trouble.
Like, my point though is you had some serious game script issues here though, of course, right? Like, so New York comes out with that 49 point, I think it was second quarter, goes up by 23 going into halftime, and then the minutes got whacked out after that. And I think for that reason, on both the Atlanta side and the New York side, you don't want to trust the minutes. But it is a little strange because you saw guys like the question I want to ask myself is, I feel like a crazy ex-girlfriend wanting to know why this happened, because I'm sitting here and I'm like, why did Hardaway get 29 minutes? Why did Nick Tolina get 34 minutes? What's wrong with Burke? You know,
Did Ron Baker play 20? This guy's the worst NBA player in the league. Ron Baker played 27 minutes.
But that's what makes me think that like better things are to come for Trey Burke. He's still not that cheap. Like, the price has gone up. I think it was, what, $4,900 in the first game. Now it's $5,800.
Right.
But you also have the best possible matchup. So I think it's okay to remain somewhat bullish on Burke's prospects going forward. Do you want to pay $900 more when he played probably 15 minutes less than you were anticipating? Maybe not, but he was good enough that I have to think the plan is to get him more minutes. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, I still am willing to trust Trey Burke going forward. I prefer to trust Nick Tolina.
He was horrible. That's my other problem with him. He played 33 minutes. He barely did anything. And some of this is carried over from last season.
He was still okay from a DFS perspective. Like, I mean, I guess I didn't realize the price had come up to $5,100, but he still scored 24 points on like $3,800 salary. So he was still a fine play.
Yeah, I get worried because his usage is low. He's just not like a, he's not an offensive player. He was like defense first point guard when they drafted him. Kind of hoping that the offense would come around. He only took 7 shots in 33 minutes.
He doesn't handle the ball either. He doesn't ever get an assist.
When you're going to share the court with Burke, Hardaway, Enes Kanter, and they have Kevin Knox there now too, like when you're going to share, you know, Knox put up 16 shots in this game. When you're going to share the court with these guys who are fine just chucking the ball the second it goes into their hands, he's going to struggle to find stuff in the offensive end, I think. I like the minutes. I think the minutes will stay there because they want to groom him to kind of be the point guard of the future. And I don't know, man. The price jumped up maybe a little bit too much. On the Brooklyn side, they went into the first game really short on guys. They had no Allen Crabbe. They had no Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Damari Carroll's out for a while with, I think, a leg issue. They are getting Crabbe and Hollis-Jefferson back in this game. Now, we saw huge minutes out of Caris LeVert. He was probably one of the plays of the night, honestly, with how well
he was highly on, too.
Yeah. Now he played 35. No, excuse me. He played 33 minutes. Dudley played 35. Joe Harris played 37. But they're going to get two of their wings back. I'm going to call Hollis Jefferson a wing. I know he plays power forward, but what do we do with our minutes? Like, are we going to trust? I think LeVert sticks in the starting lineup because they're going to move Harris and Dudley back. Do we want to give him another 33, you know, mid 30s minutes? We've seen a Nets team that's willing when they have these guys around to sort of mix and match. How much do we trust this team? It's a good matchup against New York.
Yeah, I trust LeVert, I think. The Nets are really, really short on volume shooters, especially just anyone that can create their own shot, really to any degree. I was really surprised to see Russell play 25 minutes and only get 9 shots in the air. That number seems like it stands to come up. That actually seems to me like a decision they might have made in camp or something, where they were like, listen, Russ, like, you can't be the guy who gets the ball and shoots every time. You're the point guard. Think about passing. It just looked really unnatural. I mean, 9 shots compared to LeVert's 18 shots. I wonder if we'll see them kind of meet out in the middle somewhere. Nonetheless, though, yeah, LeVert, not an easy matchup against Detroit, and he still went out there and did it. The thing, though, and I don't know if this is going to be the trend going forward, it's going to wind up creating value somewhere. The price on him jumps from $6,100 to $7,400.
Yeah.
So I think I would have trusted him on $6,100. Do I trust him on $7,400? Nah, I don't. So, and I'm really actually sort of surprised. Like, I sometimes wonder what the intention is on a site like FanDuel, where it's like, because they don't lower prices really quickly. Do they just not want the game to be fun? Do they want everyone to sit there like tearing their hair out, trying to figure out who they're going to play? Like, I don't get looking at one game where there's some injury concerns and then just mass applying.
I can't believe I'm going to say
20% price increase. Like,
FanDuel's pricing to start the season is much better than DraftKings. I can't believe I'm uttering these words, because this is this has just long been the tradition to have it been the opposite way. This year, DraftKings pricing is very soft. We've seen it for the first couple of days. There's a complete over emphasis on the superstar guys and these middle tier guys who they're not even middle tier. Like, they're like the next rung below of the DFS kind of superstar level. So, like, I'm not talking like Giannis and Brow, Harden, LeBron, guys like that. Those guys are all priced in the stratosphere. But the next group down is way too cheap. Like, guys like Kawhi, Love, we'll get into Kyrie, Drew Holiday. This next group, you can easily find balanced lineups on DraftKings right now, because their pricing is just not correcting in nearly the same speed as FanDuel. And that's, I don't know, someone kick someone in the pants over a FanDuel, because some of these pricing is getting a little bit tough. Anyone else here? Jared Allen played a lot of minutes for Brooklyn. Enes Kanter's about as good a matchup as a big can get when it comes to defense. You trust him. He played 30 minutes. His minutes don't really seem like they're in jeopardy, just because with these other guys coming back, either go 17 and 10. Is he a guy that interests you at all?
I'd rather not, to be honest. I'm going to need more track record out of the Nets before I really trust anything, because, while we saw one game out of this so far, and we kind of interestingly, it was a pretty short rotation for the Nets too. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they were like kind of in the game, so maybe they just got overly excited there. But I expected Ed Davis to eat more into the Joe Harris, Jared Dudley type minutes. I thought he would play more like the 22 to 24 we would see out of him in Portland. I thought Trevion Grant would play more minutes too. So if they're going to keep playing on a shortened rotation, then, we'll see if the minutes wind up being there. But I think getting Carroll and Crabbe back just makes me want to take a wait-and-see approach and, not force it. If it comes down to it, and if they wind up making the lineup work, then sure. But the guys that were actually good just saw dramatic price increases. So I'm going to start by not wanting to do it.
Yep, just a correction there. Crabbe and Hollis Jefferson back, not Carroll. All right, let's go. We'll move into the next set of games here. Atlanta goes in and plays Memphis. Memphis really struggled in the first game. They ended up getting blown out. The starters didn't look. Gasol looked just like he was kind of feeling his way through things. He only played 30 minutes. They basically all just got buzzed off because they were getting killed. That does not stand to be the case here against Atlanta, who lost to the Knicks in the first game. Let's start on the Memphis side. Do we stick with some of our preseason projections on the, mid-30s minutes for Gasol, mid-30s minutes for Conley, let's say? They did move Garrett Temple into the starting lineup. It's really mostly Conley and Gasol. Do we want to just drum up the short run to the blowout in the first game and still be kind of bullish on these guys? Because this is also a good matchup here against Atlanta.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you want to get too crazy when it comes to adjusting minutes based on one game, and especially not one game that's a blowout. Temple's a guy I'm actually super interested in right now. 3,800 on FanDuel, 24 minutes in the blowout, did get some shots in the air. Didn't do a whole lot else, but doesn't really need to on that price point. And, kind of like we talked about to start off the show, if Temple's not a guy you really are excited about playing, but you want to start hedging, you know, that kind of throwaway position, shooting guard looks maybe weak enough to me tonight where you just put Temple in there and hope for the best. And if he's bad, then you drop the score. I think there's a scenario where Temple plays mid-30s minutes based on what we saw in the first week. So I think it's him. But then after that, I just think these guys kind of came into this season reasonably priced. And, you know, maybe there's a Chandler Parsons big game coming down the pike. But right now, I'm just going to need to see. I need to see, before I like want to stick my neck out on some of this stuff, I just need to see one close game before I try to figure out what the coaching staff's plan is.
Yeah, Temple led the team in shots, and only 24 minutes, which I find to be interesting. If that's going to be the case for him, then he's probably too cheap, especially if they're going to play him. Yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm willing to be mid 30s minutes on Gasol and Conley. Take some of the other guys like Temple up to about 30 minutes. Not even Jamichael Green because they're bringing some of these other guys off the bench like Kyle Anderson. What about the Atlanta side? Alex Len was a chalk play the other day, really kind of did let folks down based on, you know, sort of what they thought was going to happen. Only played 21 minutes, 7 points, 4 rebounds. Price hasn't moved all that much on him, but it's a bad matchup against Memphis. Is this matchup just too bad for Atlanta to really consider? Trae Young played 33 minutes, put up 14, 6, and 5. Where do we stand on these guys? Is it kind of we wait another day because of the slow matchup against the Grizz?
Yeah, I think people forget about Len, that he's been this way in the past. Like when he was on Phoenix, he was always a guy that you'd be crossing your fingers on when it came to the foul trouble. He both got in foul trouble and they got blown out. So I do think you see bigger minutes coming forward from him. I think the Memphis matchup is actually kind of an ideal one to wait out and see where the minutes go, because I don't think that people are going to try and jam him in there after that game one performance. And it's a slow matchup with Memphis, game with a relatively low total for what Atlanta should be able to forecast going forward. So, yeah, I think you can pass on Len. But if he plays like 29, 30 minutes, then get ready to fire him up, especially if you see a price decrease, you know, after he's in a tough matchup here.
Yep, and they have Dedmon out. I think Dedmon is still doubtful to play for this game, so that would affect him too. Like, you don't want to – you really can't you can't go into this game if you think that Dedmon or these guys are going to be back. John Collins, He might be out for an extended period of time, though. All right, let's move into the next game. Cleveland goes in and plays Minnesota. Revenge game for Kevin Love? Now that Kevin Love's like the guy again in Cleveland, can we like re-fire up the revenge scenarios for Minnesota? Or has it just been too long for him? Because anyone that knows that like you have to put the revenge game multiplier. But you kind of have to adjust it based on how many teams in between the guys played for, how many years in between. What do we think about Cleveland? They Seti Osman, 6,200 on Fantel, so you only live once with some of these guys. What do we want to do with Cleveland? Did you see enough out of them in the first game between Love, 34 minutes, Seti, 33 minutes, was really good, 17 and 10, George Hill, 31. Anything you like on Cleveland, and then we can talk about Minnesota.
Yeah, well, Love, first of all, hopefully the listeners understand that you were mostly joking.
I was 100% kidding. Oh, my God, please.
Just want to make sure, because it didn't sound like it when you were talking about how you have to adjust the multiplier when you get multiple teams between there. But, yeah, at this point, it'd be like, you know, am I trying to get revenge against my like sixth grade girlfriend for cheating on me? Probably not. You know, it's like time tends to heal these wounds, I think, in terms of I'm going to play extra hard tonight to try to put up big numbers. As far as Love goes, I still think he's cheap for what we're going to see going forward. I don't think the Seti Osman plan, him stepping in and being a LeBron light, is going to sustain itself over the course of the entire season. I still think they have a pretty glaring usage deficiency that they're going to have to fill somewhere. I don't think the combination of Hood and Clarkson is going to fill that. I don't think George Hill is going to fill that. So, and I don't think Seti Osman's going to fill it either. And they still don't really start an offensive center. So I still think the usage for Love is going to come. I think they're kind of trying to ease into it. I do think you can play him right now. And you probably can wait a game, but I don't know, man. On FanDuel, I don't totally still understand the cultural shift. Do you think we're going to see, I guess a better question is, do you think we're going to continue to see, like, Seti Osman, $1,400 price increase. Torian Prince, in a game where he gets blown out, sees an $1,100 price increase just because he pays 5x on his price. Like, is FanDuel just desperate now to drive down scores or to make it more challenging? Like, what's... to drive people out of the mid-range? Are they just like so desperate to have people play stars and scrubs by throwing away positions and taking studs? Like, why now on the $1,400 price increases on guys like Osman and Is this how it's going to be all season?
There's been a clear change in their algorithm for pricing. I think that's it. And I think that, you know, when you do these things, there's only so many ways you can test and backtest, I think, how you're going to account for when you want to raise guys' prices. And forever, they didn't. These guys didn't move an inch or whatever the metric would be. They didn't move a dollar after, you know, and we would see 70, 80% ownership, especially like late in the season, because you would just get guys that were way too cheap. I think they've just done a complete overcorrection on it. It's clear that there's a clear change that some piece of performance plus performance or ownership is affecting these guys and having really, really fast price corrections. I think at some point it'll probably have to slow down. I think we're seeing the most now because this is the time where the most guys will kind of come out of nowhere, right? Like the beginning of the season, you weren't sure. No one knew if he was going to start, you know, or maybe they knew he was going to start. I'm talking about Osman here. He was going to start and like just be good right away. I think you'll see the most of it happening now, and then we'll probably in a week kind of fall into, okay, now we're starting to again look for those cheap fill-in plays like Cameron Payne last night, guys who are going to start out of nowhere. I think things will tend to normalize. I'm with you that Love is still a great deal right now at 8,000 on DraftKings. Yeah. Excuse me, at 8,000 on FanDuel. He led the team in shots. He was really bad from the field. He shot 28% from the field on 18 shots. Easily took the most shots on the team. Played the most minutes. I think his stats stand to go nothing but. I mean, remember, this is a really bad matchup, that first game against Toronto. Like, about as bad as matchup as you're going to get on a defensive end, for what, especially for his position. So I think that all these numbers are going to come up. I think if we saw a huge, like, 5X fantasy game for him, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities. 40 points, 45 points more if the shots are falling. I think this is a time we're probably buying low, even at 8,000 on Love. Minnesota kind of came out and did Minnesota things. Some of the starters played a lot of minutes. They had real bad foul trouble with guys like Towns to start the game, or start the season. I don't want to go crazy on, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is not going to play 22 minutes again in a game, right? He was in major league foul trouble. He was really good on 22 minutes, went 8, 9, and 3. Just couldn't play enough. Wiggins plays 37. Butler didn't play as much as I thought he would, but he really didn't have a ton of training camp because all the drama that was going on. He was still really good with 23 and 7. Good matchup against Cleveland here. Anything you like on the Minnesota side?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're gonna have to go site by site here. On FanDuel, I'm not seeing a whole lot that I want to sink my teeth into. It's a solid matchup. Again, we have a weird game to start this season, and it's also weird because of the playing time situation in that game. So, like, I don't know. And it was a hard matchup, too, with the Spurs. So, like, it's really hard to derive a lot. And on the same token, they're returning mostly the same guys who played very, very consistent minutes. So I tend to believe that the minutes are going to come back. I think on FanDuel, they're probably still pretty appropriately priced. On DraftKings, you have Towns at 9,100. That seems on the cheap side to me. Right now, he's showing up in lineup 2 for us. And, of course, Butler was just an utterly unanimous play on DraftKings at the brokenly low price. What was it, like 6,700? He's up to 8,100. So he's been price corrected on some level. Still probably playable, but not anything you need to force. Minnesota, I'm probably going to have the same opinion about them as I'll have all season, which is they're going to be pretty fairly priced based on playing very, very consistent minutes. You're going to play them in good matchups, and you're going to pass on them in bad matchups. And probably some of the guys that are running hot are going to get priced out of contention. So yeah, right now in FanDuel, I'm not really seeing it. But that could change, you know, as the week kind of progresses here.
A game that I think does have a lot of fantasy implications is the next one up on the list. Is Sacramento goes in and plays New Orleans. New Orleans is a big minus 11.5 home favorites here after a real nice win against the Rockets in game one. Davis was unbelievable. I was a little worried about his fantasy production with some of the new pieces they added. That was let me say this. I was worried based on the end of his season last year. I didn't want to completely project the historic level numbers he was putting up near the end of the season, just because of some of the new additions they had. But that was unfounded, and he obviously completely killed it. Guy that did not get price corrected enough here was Elfrid Payton. He was a guy that we were all over, especially on DraftKings in the first game. The only concern really with him was he going to play enough point guard minutes? And when he looked at their bench, it was hard to see who else they would even play unless they just moved Drew over to the one. He played 36 minutes, and he was good. And so I think between the 36 minutes, the fact that he was good, and the fact that they won, would you say that his minutes are very safe right now? Because 7,000 seems way too cheap if this is what he's going to plan on doing. Not way too cheap. It's very cheap based on what he did and the minutes. Are we feeling content enough there? And then we can talk about the rest of the team.
Yeah, I love Payton.
Yep.
I think he just did so much. He was so active on the court. He really looked like, you know what he looked like? What they were hoping Rajon Rondo would be. He contributed across all three major categories. Actually, his stat line just reads like a line of binary code. 10, 10, 10, 0, 1, 1. So it's just kind of awesome. But I'm just a sucker for mathematical simplicity. But yeah, the triple-double there in the first week of the season, or first game, it's not NFL now, the first game of the season, they just have to be thrilled with what they're getting out of him in one game. And I don't see why they wouldn't ride the hot hand. They've tried to do it in the past. We've seen New Orleans sustain pretty significant fantasy production when they do this kind of like consolidating the shots and consolidating the minutes thing. And I think you're seeing probably 3 to 4 guys on New Orleans you're going to be able to consider from night to night. And that's Peyton, Mirotić, who I'm curious to get your thoughts on. He's another guy that went up by 10% in price. And then Dip Brow, of course, at 13-3. But actually, let's segue to Mirotić real quick because, you know, we played him on FanDuel. And we were part of the 3% of the population that got to celebrate his absolutely absurd 30 and 10 night, 45 fantasy points. But he did play just 29 minutes. So I don't think you're going to want to count on him for, you know, a 30 and 10 if he's only going to be on the court for 29 minutes. Do you think he's going to get more minutes going forward? Did we kind of get like the one good Nikola Mirotić game and now he's going to be overpriced because he's actually going to play less than most people think? Did he lose minutes in a blowout where the other guys didn't? Like, I'm kind of having similar concerns for him as I did about Trey Burke. You know, like, all the other starters seemed to play their minutes in a blowout. Why didn't he? It's like driving me crazy.
Yeah, so I think on some level we got very lucky with his shooting, right? He shot 55% from the field. He knocked down 6 of 8 threes. There's no way you can't say we weren't lucky on the shooting there. The 10 rebounds was encouraging, though. I think as they move him closer to the basket, especially if they're going to be able to play an inside-out game between he and Davis. I'm concerned with the minutes as well because 30 minutes here, they didn't need to play him near the end of the game because they were winning by a lot, and he's sort of like is like.
But they didn't need to play anyone. Why did they play everyone else?
I was gonna say because he's like a defensive liability, and so at that point, there's just no reason to keep him on the court, and so that could be like just a little too much speculation. I'm not sure. You can't give him 35 minutes.
I don't know. I think he's in timeshare with Julius Randle. That's the thing I'm concerned about. I think that the plan is to play 25 minutes out of Randle every night just to keep him happy, and I think he'll probably cut into some combination of Mirotić and Davis's minutes. But yeah, I'm going to tread cautiously with Mirotić until we see him come back to more minutes, I think.
By the way, Julius Randle, 25 points, 8 rebounds in 23 minutes. Like, that is that is some otherworldly stuff. These guys have a lot of fantasy upside on them, and this is probably a situation where the second one guy gets hurt, the next guy up is just going to be a complete mortal lock because we're going to see a price consolidation on the starters really quickly. Like Elfrid Payton, back to him real quick, mortal lock at 5,800 on DraftKings. Easiest play probably of the night, I would say. But we're going to see a consolidation of price around the other starters. They played the best game they could ever possibly play, again, probably against the Rockets. They just were making everything. That's not going to also happen. They're not going to be able to sustain this level of scoring throughout their starting lineup plus the bench. So I think I don't want to play Mirotić again at this price, I don't think. And I'm probably just going to wait for the time when someone like Randle was looking questionable. Now he's probable. If he weren't to play, then we could probably see 38 minutes out of Mirotić. I think we're going to probably have to wait for a situation like that. Now on the Sacramento side, we get an interesting thing. I couldn't believe it. I wrote 2 Kings up in the cash game articles last night. The Kings were a team that I refused to even say their name in the podcast last year because they were so frustrating, just terrible, an embarrassment to the league and how they deployed their minutes and their players. Just an embarrassment on all levels. Now, last game, though, Cauley-Stein, 38 minutes with no Kufos. Kufos is out again tonight. De'Aaron Fox, 37 minutes, was really good. He's a guy I think they want to play big minutes. And he actually helps push the pace also, too. They were a very slow-paced team last year. That will not be the case if they have Fox running 37 minutes of point guard for them. So I think that is a number. Heald played 31. Yogi Ferrell played 30 minutes. Are the Kings at scheme? After one game, am I going too crazy and thinking that the Kings might be a team that we can start to trust?
Possibly breathless over the Kings right now. I love it. It's a new year.
It is. I can't believe it. You would think I got like a Francie cloned here, like into somebody else. No one's going to get that reference.
No one will get at all. But yeah, so I do like the Kings. I mean, there's a number of reasons. I think probably at some point, someone in the offseason was like, just like waking up from a long bender, which was the Kings 2017-2018 season, being like, what did we do last year? Does anyone remember? I don't remember. Anyway, let's try to figure out what we should do going forward. And they're like acting extra responsible now. I think Cauley-Stein, De'Aaron Fox will both be very highly owned. Fox, I don't know if you saw this because I don't think you were able to put lineups in that night. he was like 35% owned in cash games that night against Utah. So
right.
I think people were picking up on the fact that his minutes were going to be on the rise. I mean, we played Burke and Nikitalina, and you know, we were kind of more on the chalk. But yeah, I think you'll see a significant ownership out of him. The price has come up, but it looks totally justified. Cauley-Stein, the same thing with Kufos out. And don't forget that, yeah, sure, New Orleans blew Houston out to start the season, but last year they were the very fastest team in the league, which is, by the way, good for Elfrid Payton too, just to pace up for him just moving to this team. But they also were only middle of the pack in defensive efficiency, so I think they will continue to be a positive matchup for opposing DFS teams, assuming this trend of blowing teams out doesn't continue. So yeah, I'll play some Kings tonight. Why not, man?
Yep, I can't believe it. I think you can be bullish. Like I said, the only thing you got to be a little concerned with Cauley-Stein, if he's drawing a lot of Davis, there's foul trouble concerns for sure with him trying to stay with Davis, especially in the interior. It's hard to really project that totally into his projection, and I just want to caution people to say, if he had 2 fouls in the first 5 minutes, I wouldn't be completely shocked because it's a very, very, very difficult matchup for him. All right, let's keep it rolling through. And by the way, there's probably a little bit of blowout concern in that game as well. 8 o'clock, next 8 o'clock game, or 8 o'clock Eastern, Boston goes in and plays Toronto, and the two teams between them and Philly, they'll probably be duking it out in the playoffs here to see who goes to the NBA Finals when all things are said and done. We'll start with Toronto. I was breathless over Kawhi to start the season. He didn't really disappoint. He was very good against Cleveland. His price did not really move that much on either site. He still seems really like a very easy DraftKings play to me. I'm not sure what you think. Did you see enough about a Kawhi? By the way, the one thing that I said, the reason I was very bullish on Kawhi going in was because I thought they would, as long as he was healthy, the minutes were going to be completely there because there's no reason to save this guy, right? Like, the reason is to have him get his and have them win, and that was going to, and that completely, completely played out. 37 minutes, 24 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, and actually didn't even get anything on the defensive end, which is not really going to often happen for a guy like him. I'm still very much on him for tonight. I don't think his price has moved enough, even with a bad matchup against Boston.
I'd rather not play him on FanDuel at 9,400, just to be perfectly frank with you. You know, it was... And I don't want to be overly adjusting to a weird game one where he like kind of burned us there. I think you're probably right that the defensive stats are going to come to fruition. I don't know that we can trust 22 shots a game out of him just because he hasn't really ever sustained that in the past. And just mostly the Boston matchup too. Like, the Celtics play really, really good defense. They play really slow. They were the 6th slowest team in the NBA last season. I just don't think in general you're going to want to play guys against Boston. And oh yeah, they were the top defense in all of last year too, and they're healthier this year. I see it on DraftKings. Like, I don't want to dissuade anyone from running him there. 8,500 is just kind of comically cheap for him over there, so I think you'll just kind of go with it. But on FanDuel, you want to prioritize this guy at 9,400. Right now, he's in 100% of our lineup, so that just feels pretty ambitious and basically the worst possible matchup.
Why are you saying he burned it? He had 42.5 fantasy points. What do you mean burned on the first game? Like, did you think he had a bad game
on FanDuel? He had a terrible game. On FanDuel, he had 39 points on a $9,600 salary. He was the worst guy on our team.
I didn't realize he was so expensive. Anyway, I think that
he's still good on DraftKings. At 8,500, he was great. Yeah, you'll take it. I mean, he was 8,000 on DraftKings. He was a fine play there, but that's a gulf of a price difference.
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty confident in the shots. I think that this is a team that does not have a lot in the way of guys who can create their own shots, and he's, especially in the offense, it's really just him and Lowry. That's basically it. I think the usage is going to sustain this season. I know it's a bad matchup, and I still think I still think his price is going to climb. Especially too, because I think he's going to chip in more defensive stuff over the course of the season. There's no possible way he doesn't. Like, to get completely shut out in the steals and blocks category is just not. I know those things you can kind of get. They can cluster from game to game. But he's such a great defender. I don't know. I'm still okay with that. I think that other people will be turned off by the price. I still very much like it. I don't really like anything else in this Toronto team. They did what they kind of do is play Lowry. They did play Danny Green a lot, 32 minutes. Everyone else seems like they're going to play rotational stuff. And then Boston, they played a blowout the first game against Philly, and it still kind of worked out the way we thought it was going to in terms of minutes. There's no reason to overextend any of these guys. Is Toronto just too bad of a matchup for how many minutes you can stand to see from Boston?
Yeah, I think Boston, you're just too many mouths to feed. You still have prices based on what happened last season, and until we get some price corrections there, I actually kind of picture them settling in as a Charlotte-type team where the minutes are pretty secure among the starters and the bench, and we'll basically only be looking at them when you just get increased opportunity for whatever reason. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about them right now.
Indiana played a blowout in the first game, so tough to get a read on them. Didn't really do any adjustments on their preseason minutes just because I don't think we really learned a lot. Milwaukee came out, though. I think we did learn something about Milwaukee. We learned that Giannis is going to do everything for this team. His minutes were, this game was close, and he only played. So here's the thing. I don't want to say like I called it again, but what I said about the Bucks was I think he plays less minutes and they get more fantasy points because they just have like more of a clue about what's going on. And Giannis played 34 minutes, went 25, 18, and 8. Do you think that like is going to end up meeting in the middle on him, like where he's not going to need to have 37, 38 minutes a game and they just have a better scheme that's just going to get all their guys more points and just more things in general? Do you think that was a correct assessment after seeing one game of what we saw from the Bucks?
Yeah, I think keeping an eye on Giannis is a really good idea here. Of all the big stars, I think most of them saw price increases. Brow's price went up dramatically, now north of 13.3. We've seen Giannis produce on the same level as those guys in the past, and now he's among the cheapest of them. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to keep an eye on him. I think other Bucks, you know, we're still kind of waiting to see how this power forward situation is going to shake out. Parker out of town. I just think it's kind of like an open book. We're still, you know, with the other bigs too, like Brolo. You know, he was a guy we looked at. He only played 21 minutes, but it's like not clear what exactly the plan is there going forward. So, yeah, I think you're going to get value out of those guard bucks, like Middleton's another guy, and Giannis for sure. And then I'm really curious to see what's going to shake out at the power forward, because right now, I'll tell you that if there is a winner out of that situation, like say Ilyasova starts clocking in at, I don't know, 32 minutes a game, he's going to be really, really interesting at a $4,500 price tag.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're always a tough team because they can play. Giannis is so versatile that they don't have to like sort of traditionally sustain these other positions like center and power forward, because he can just play center at times. He can just play power forward at times and guard all those positions. So from a minutes perspective, they can just find rotations that they like. Again, they weren't able to do this last year because they were so poorly coached. With Coach Bud, that is not going to be the case. So if they're just going to find optimal matchups. One guy I am kind of bullish on that I think the minutes do stay in this area is Malcolm Brogdon. He played 38 minutes in their first game. The key here is that Dellavedova didn't play at all. So if the idea here is now, oh, our secondary point guard is just Brogdon, like he's the starting shooting guard, and then he'll play point guard when Bledsoe's off the court and they'll be able to mix and match. Mostly the reason I like the minutes here is because, like I said, Dellavedova just rides the pine the entire game. So if he's like, this guy's not playing, our three ball handlers are going to be Brogdon, Giannis, and Bledsoe. Brogdon is versatile enough, especially on the defensive end, I think, to sustain this many minutes. Wasn't great from a fantasy perspective, but still coming pretty cheap. So I think that's an interesting situation to watch. I'm very encouraged. I put the Bucks. My one bet was Bucks over. I forget what their win number was, but I did the over on whatever their wins was, and I felt very good after watching the first game. What about Indiana? Do we want to prioritize any of these guys against Milwaukee? It's supposed to be a close game. Decent over under at 216.
I don't know. Indiana, just another one of those teams that winds up leaving me cold. I think that you see some potential value picking its head up here. A guy like, you know, that our system wants you to think about if the minutes are ever going to come back is Darren Collison. Again, it was a really weird game with Memphis, but if the plan is to play him mid-30s minutes when he's not playing god awfully, he's probably at a pretty cheap price tag right now. But, you know, in the first game we saw Joseph come out and get the 28 minutes and actually produce very, very well. I have not been high on Oladipo from the start of the season. I've been very concerned about how Tyreke Evans was going to kind of muddy up the works there, and I've never really been too excited about the bigs. So, you know, just to my gut tells me I'm not going to be too high on the Pacers until we see more. Maybe a guy like Sabonis, if he continues to get, like if he can get into the 30s minutes, I'm going to be more interested. But right now, Indiana's just kind of like this gives me a weird feeling in my stomach when I think about plugging him in.
I don't mind. I actually don't mind Oladipo at 8,400 on FanDuel tonight. I'm going to probably want to go a couple other places. I'm looking at the wrong site. It was right in this range. Oh, yeah, 8,400. Sorry, he's the same on both sides. I don't mind it. Decent points per dollar play. One of the reasons you're not going to have to prioritize him, though, is because this OKC Clippers game really looks like Russ is not going to play. He still hasn't practiced, hasn't taken any contact since the knee surgery. He remains doubtful. Not sure why they don't just give him a timetable for return. Maybe it's just because it's Westbrook and they're trying to keep him happy or he wants to play. I'm not exactly sure. It doesn't seem like he's anywhere close to playing, and yet he just remains doubtful or, you know, questionable with these tags. But I think we're going to see a lot of Dennis Schroeder again. His price is 7,000, only ticks up a little bit there. Went from 5,000 to 7,000 on FanDuel. He's still at 7,000. He seems like a pretty easy play here, all things considered. Took the second most shots on the team. will play a ton of minutes. Is he like, he's in 100% of our FanDuel lineups right now. Do you feel comfortable with that? Do you think he's chalk again?
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. I don't know why everyone else needs a $1,400 price increase, but Schroeder gets a $100 price increase. Right. This guy will be basically a unanimous play, and you just got to love it. I don't think there's too much more analysis. You know, when I write the picks, I'll often time just dismiss a play as just a price and opportunity mismatch. And I think that's what you have here with Schroeder. If he's going to be running this offense, he's probably like an $8,000 at least player, and $7,000 just a joke. I won't dignify it with any more analysis than that.
PG, another one, 9,200. He saw the highest usage on the team, took a lot of threes, which is a really good sign for him. Stands to reason that it can hang with the Clippers here. Clippers like aren't, you know, they have some guys, but they're just not all that great of a team. Do you think, you know, PG or they're around the same price, PG or Kawhi on FanDuel tonight? 9,200 for George, 9,400 on Kawhi. Do you have an inclination of which one you would rather play between those two guys?
Yeah, that's pretty close, I guess, when you put it down that way. I think I'd go with George. And the reason for that is, again, it's funny. We were deciding between George and Kawhi in the past when they were just on totally different teams, each of them. I don't think too much has changed in terms of what they bring to the table. The difference here is George has a dramatically increased opportunity over a price that he already maintained last year. And Kawhi, I'm still just going to be in wait-and-see mode with him. And he has the worst possible matchup in the league. One quick note just about usage and whatnot. Last year, the league leader in shot attempts per game was Russell Westbrook with 21. So I just don't think there's any reasonable scenario where Kawhi sustains 22 if he settles in, you know, among the league leaders, but doesn't quite top the league in shots. He'll be around like the 18 to 19 range. And given that he already didn't pay this price shooting 22 times, I know this is a very imprecise way of doing it. He'll get more steals and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think I would lean George. I'm leaning George, but not running in that direction.
Clippers lost to the Nuggets in the first game by 9. The Gallinari played 34 minutes. Tobias Harris played 41 minutes. But the most interesting one, Boban Marjanovic played 18 minutes and went 18-8. This guy, this guy can sustain like $6,000 price tags on like 15 minutes or something like that. Like he's just unbelievable.
He'll just go 2x points per dollar on, or 2x points per minute. That's like what we've gotten used to from him.
Okay, so here's the thing. I have not, for some reason, did not adjust his minutes overnight, which I'm looking at now. Let's assume he's 4,000 on FanDuel. Let's assume he plays 16 minutes in this game. That would put him right around 22 projected fantasy points or something like that. Is he a guy that we just like would feel okay just locking in at 4,000, hope that he plays 15 minutes, know that that's getting close to the minimum? Like, does he strike you as a guy? Oh, man, this guy can also play 0 minutes. It's so crazy. But, like, is he a guy that you might want to just consider kind of just like playing at 4,000 on FanDuel, hope he plays 15 and just dominates on the time that he's on the court?
Yeah, you're going to see people take that stab, and I don't mind it. I mean, he's like if you're going to do the old, like, kind of try to hedge and not pure punt away a position, then Boban is the perfect guy to plug in at the center spot. He can definitely get you 40 fantasy points on this price tag, and he can get you 4 as well. So I don't mind it. I think if you can, you can probably just get more safety elsewhere. Obviously, he's going to be a somewhat popular big tournament play, but I don't know that you just want to, again, with Boban and the teams he's been on, there has to be some reason why he doesn't sustain consistent minutes on a night-to-night basis on every team, even smart teams that he's been on. So
I was told you because he's ugly. It's because he looks weird. I'm positive this is it. They look down the bench.
And he just looks awkward when he's over there because
he just looks so awkward. Like, he's so awkward looking. He doesn't look athletic at all, like, when you actually look at him. And I think that just turns people off. I'm positive. That's my theory on him. And I'm just like, I can't explain any other reason. Like, for 15 minutes, the guy just completely dominates when he's in there. I know we got to get out of here because I could go on and on about Boban. All right, last game, Golden State and Utah. Golden State is only -2.5 favorite on the road against a very good Utah team. Kevin Durant is still coming. I mean, he's at 90. Oh, no, he's 10-2. He's got a guy coming into our system right now as a possible FanDuel play, even against Utah. Can you see that happening? It's Durant. The guy's among the best in the league. There are a lot of mouths to feed here on Golden State. Would that make you comfortable, or would you rather like just kind of pay down for George or Kawhi in this situation?
Yeah, I think I'd rather pay down. I think he's playable. I think Durant is just a little bit too cheap. This is always a weird thing that DFS will do to us, where you take a guy in a really bad matchup, but it's probably too cheap. And I think it tends to work out worse than you would think it would. Like, it's, you know, you get a guy like Durant for 10,000, you're like, well, he's a true talent 10-8 player. So yeah, it's Utah. What are you going to do? But Utah really right there with Boston. It's actually crazy, these two teams. 1-2 in terms of defensive efficiency and 1-2 in terms of being the two slowest teams in the league last year. So you really got to, I'm sorry, they were 3-4 in terms of slowness. But you really, really got to be confident in your play to run someone against Utah. So I'll think about Durant, but he's the only guy on this Golden State team that I would even really consider to be playable, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there too. I mean, just in terms of the overall price, and he just contributes in so many different ways. And then Utah, they kind of just did the same thing that they've done for years past. They have guys like Inglis will play a lot, or Joe Ingles. I mean, Gobert and Donovan Mitchell played 37 and 36 minutes. I think we can see similar production out of those guys tonight. And then the bench guys kind of played. One interesting guy, it would be interesting when if and when Ricky Rubio gets hurt to see what happens with Dante Exum, because he played more minutes than Rubio to start the year. It was decent, 13-4-4. I don't know if at some point the plan is to just have him be like their bench spark, or to actually bring him into the starting lineup. They've wanted to play him for years, and there's just been so many injuries that they've never been able to. This will be a very interesting injury situation if and when it crops up. But I think for tonight, I don't know if you're with me, but I think for tonight we can probably avoid this situation. All right, we are going to get out of here. DFSR.com/deals gets you that podcast deal of $24.95. That's good for like next week or so, and then we'll go back up to our base rate. So go and get that. You also get free 7 days to try it out. You'll be able to try out NBA and NFL as well. Buddy, enjoy your Friday night of basketball. I'll talk to you next week.
Will do.